And we're holding on page Lamed Tes in Ksubas Ois Lamed. Page Lamed Tes Ois Lamed, yes. Okay, so as we started learning about yesterday, the subject of this perek is various things that would affect the shalom bayis, or otherwise the relationship between the husband and the wife. There can be where he subjects her to various nedarim, and how long she has to put up with it before it's grounds for divorce. The other way around, if she makes nedarim, as we're going to talk about later. So the Mishnah mentioned not just Nidarim, but other kinds of things, other kinds of restrictions that he might put on her. So the Mishnah then describes a case where the husband says to his, where the husband forbids his wife from going to a Beis HaOvel, to be Menachem Ovel, her friends, or relatives, or to go to a Beis HaMishteh, to a Simcha, to a family or friend's Simcha. So the Gemara points out, Tanya, The problem with that is the next piece of it here, that it impinges on their marriage. It makes it that, as we're going to say, that with that kind of thing, it's going to mean, therefore, that it's going to eventually, it's going to bounce back on her. If she doesn't go to such things, then it's going to end up bouncing back on her, and therefore it's a valid thing for her to be able to say, and based on, look, if my husband is going to treat me this way, then I can't stay married to him. So the Gemara says, Tanya Hoyer of Meir Omer, my dichtiv, what does it mean in the Pasuk, Tov lalachas el beis evil, mi lachas el beis mishta, better to go to the house of an ovel than to a pori, basher hu soif kol ha'adam, because death is, after all, the eventual end of every person, v'hachayit in a liboy, and the living will take it to heart. We're all familiar with the expression, hachayit in a liboy, that I've mentioned it probably thousands of times in the years after Rebbe Tzinchai Mushka passed away. Anyway, my v'hachayit in a liboy, specifically, what is that? What is the living supposed to take to heart from going to a Beis HaOvel? So it means Dvarim Shal Misa. A person has to consider, a person has to realize for himself the matter of that eventually he's going to be in the same situation himself. So in other words, he shouldn't feel, Rashi says, in other words, he shouldn't feel bad, that he shouldn't feel it's a waste of time, let's say, to go to be Menachem Oval, others, because he should realize, and then to go attend people's levayas or whatever, because he should realize eventually he's going to be in that same situation himself. The Yisped, somebody who cries and mourns for somebody else, Yispedune, eventually they will do the same thing for him. So in other words, by him doing it for other people, that helps him remember his own Yom HaMista, and to realize that that's where he's going to end up as well, and that other people, he wants people to give him that covered as well, so he should be doing it for others. Diyakber, somebody who helps bury others, Yakberune, then he will be buried. In other words, if not, the Eibishter can always arrange, unfortunately, as we know, it happens sometimes, that there's nothing to be found or whatever. Diyodal, somebody who lifts up, Rashi explains, he lifts up his voice in crying and in mourning, then eventually people will lift up their voices in his honor. Delavai, somebody who's Malava, the mess, to the Beis HaChaim, Yolavune, then people will attend his Levaya. Detan, the one who actually carries the Mitta, Yutanune, then other people will eventually carry him. So it's a reciprocal thing. So in other words, the point is that if the husband now is telling his wife that she shouldn't go, for example, to be Menachem Oval, or friends and family, then she has a justified claim to say that's not right, that eventually it means that I'm going to also eventually go unloved and whatever. A number of different mafoshim over here talk about what exactly was the Gemara's question on v'achayit and alibay anyway. I mean, yeah, it means, in other words, a person should keep in mind that soifa de mamisa. What exactly is the Gemara bothered by that brings it to this drasha? So one thing is that Rif talks about at some length over here, that the fact that it says, it starts out by saying that the fact that it uses the new word v'achayit and alibay, It should just say v'yitin aliboy, why v'achayitin aliboy. So it's telling us this idea that even when he's alive, he should keep these kinds of things in mind. Eitz Yosef brings something else as well, that after all, the question is, why do we have to say v'achayitin aliboy, that a person should do these things because he should keep in mind? Shouldn't a person be doing things from and remembering about that he's eventually going to die? Why should a person? Now, the Gemara tells us in Brachas that if a person is being tormented by his Yetzirah, then the last ditch thing is Yazkir lo yom yomisa. Mention to the Yetzirah that, you know what, eventually that person has to realize he's going to die, and that's the last resort. The Gemara mentions over there, learn Torah, say Krishma, various other things, and if none of those are working, then mention to him Yom HaMisa and see if that keeps him at bay. So the question would be, why are we saying V'chayit Nalibay, as though that's the main thing? A person should be doing Tshuva and doing Maisim Tovim because he loves Hashem, not because of that. So we're saying it's not talking about the Misa itself, we're talking about that he should realize to do these things for the Maisim.
Something about about this.
Yeah.
He's saying that if Yetzirah comes to Yerushalayim Demita.
Yeah.
So he said over there, tell him about the Mashiach will come. Mashiach will come, will disappear.
Okay.
That's what he said. He said, in me,
that's... Yeah, so the Yom HaMetzah doesn't mean your death, it means his death. Interesting. And it means that the Yetzirah is... It means the time of the Yetzirah's death. Interesting. Very good. Okay. So Marshall also points out, by the way, over here now, it does mention earlier in the Masechta that when it comes to a Simchas Chosin V'Kala, then we say Ma'avir Nesames Melifnei Chosin V'Kala, that, for example, we talked about earlier in the Masechta, if you have, let's say, on the road, there's a procession going to bury someone, and there's another procession of a Chosin V'Kala, then the Mes gives way to the Chosin V'Kala. So that's true. When they meet up there, and there's that conflict between them, then you need to do that. But other than that, as the Pasuk is saying, in a way, it's better to go to the Beis HaAvel because it makes the person realize these points. That's what I'm saying. If Yiddush Hashem b'Simcha, but sometimes there's also, that's the point. That was exactly the point that Eitz Yosef is saying. When it comes to doing Torah and Mitzvahs, no, it shouldn't be because of fear of Mitzvah and because of fear of what's going to happen to you after 120. But when we're saying, in other words, a person might need to motivate himself, why should I bother schlepping out to that Levaya? Why should I go and help with the actual Kavura or whatever? Realize that the same thing will be done for him eventually.
Selfish.
In a way, but you know what? If that's what it takes to motivate a person, you know, it takes shalei lishma, bal lishma, right? Yeah. The Gemara continues. Then the Gemara continues again with various other things where a husband might want to restrict his wife doing various things. So the Gemara says, Tanya Nami Hochi, we learn also in a Braisa, Hamadris Ishto, that if he puts his wife under a neder, that she shouldn't lend out various household utensils. Nafa, a sieve, or kvara, a sifter, those are both used for sorting things, but a sieve is used, a nafa is used for grain, or is used for flour, rather. A kavara would be used for coarser things, whatever. Rechayim, or millstones, a portable hand mill to grind grain. The tanner, or a portable oven. So he puts his wife under a neder not to lend or borrow any of those things. Yotzi v'yitzin ksuba, then also he can be required by Beis Din to divorce her and pay her ksuba, because he causes her to have a bad name among the neighbors. People are going to think that she's stingy. That's as far as her lending them out, as far as her not borrowing them. Some of the Mephoshim point out, if she doesn't borrow them, then people are going to think that, you know what, she doesn't want to borrow them because she doesn't want to lend them out either. Tosfos also makes a point, not printed over here in Ein Yaakov, but Tosfos makes a point. He might say, for example, he might not explicitly say, I don't want you to borrow these things, but he might say something like, he might make a neder, if you borrow any of those utensils, I won't eat the food that's prepared using those utensils. And that amounts to saying that she can't borrow them because she's going to be serving him food at home, so therefore it would impinge on their marriage. And the Braisa continues, V'chein he should not draw the same way if she makes a neder, the same way if she does the other way around, she makes a neder, that she won't borrow or lend out sieves or sifters or mills or ovens, or and a fifth one, or another one that she won't weave nice clothing for the children. Nowadays you don't have that. You just go to Boutique, or you go on Amazon or whatever, and you order clothes for the kids. But back then it was a normal thing. Most women would weave clothes for their family, and it's an expected thing for her to do. So if she does that kind of thing, then she can be divorced without paying her ksuba. The general rule throughout this perek and in various other places in this mesechta and throughout fast is where the problem in the marriage is her fault, then she forfeits her ksuba as a result of it. And when the problem is because of him, then Beis Din can force him to divorce her, but he has to pay her ksuba. Keep in mind, by the way, all this is before Cherem Di Rabbeinu Gershom, where the husband can divorce his wife without her consent. Since then, you do also need her to consent to receiving the gift, otherwise it doesn't work, and then you have the rare case of a heter meir rabbanim where it doesn't work. So the same idea. There you have the other way around. She's giving him a bad name among the neighbors, that people are going to think that they're antisocial and stingy. And in the case of the nice clothing, they're going to think, why are his kids not dressed properly? Okay. Further on, it talks about that in general, if the wife is prone to making nedarim, but prone to breaking her nedarim, then that's also a problem, and that can also be grounds for divorce. Now, in general, throughout the Perek, the Gemara explains that the kind of things that would be grounds for divorce that she does wrong are not, we're not just talking any kind of averus. If, let's say, for example, she breaks Shabbos, that wouldn't necessarily be grounds for divorce. That's not something that directly affects their marriage. But when it's things that do, for example, in various places in the Perek, it talks about, let's say, for example, she serves her husband today for food. She doesn't tell him when she's nigger. She dresses or acts unsneistic or whatever. Those kinds of things are grounds for divorce. So now, if she's breaking the Dorim, what does that have to do with the, what does that have to do with the status of their marriage? Why is that any different than breaking Shabbos, let's say? So the answer is because Ba'avon Nedorim Bonim Mason, because as for the Avera of violating the Dorim, a person's children, Nachman Latzlan, can die. We mean particularly young children. The Gemara mentions elsewhere, young children, they're not old enough to have Averas of their own yet, but sometimes they can be the ones who die because of their parents' Averas. So Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Al titinas picha lachtias besarecha. The Pasuk says, don't allow your mouth to cause your flesh to sin. Your flesh meaning your children as well. V'goymer, and the Pasuk continues, it goes like this. Al toymer lifnei malach kishgogahi. Don't say in front of the malach that it was a mistake. The Pasuk continues, Loma yiktsef, the Gemara is not quoting the whole Pasuk over here, Marsha Gaushin's various parts of it, Loma yiktsef, the Kimal Kelecha, why should Hashem be angry at what you said with your voice, the Chibelos Masi Adecha, and destroy the work of your hands? So elsewhere, actually, the Gemara explains that the Chibelos Masi Adecha refers to one's children. So in other words, we're saying that if a person spoke with his mouth improperly, said Nedarim, and doesn't keep them, then that can cause the work of his hands, namely his children, into whom he put so much effort, may die, Rahman. Marsha discusses over here that also the malach and the posik, what does it mean? Does it mean Rashi in Shabbos, where this Gemara is also brought, explains that the malach of the posik, we know that malach can mean a messenger, so it means the messenger of Hektish. You made a neder to Hektish, and you're not paying it up, and the gizbar is coming, the treasurer of Hektish is coming to demand payment from you. So you're going to say, Kishkoga, it was a mistake, I didn't mean to make the neder. So he'll tell you, listen, you know, you made the neder, you got to keep it, unless you're going to be makdir neder. And Marisha says it can also mean the malach means actually malach, that you're not, don't say, well, I violated the neder, because look, you had no business making the neder in the first place.
A thousand dollars we do.
Sure, a person wants to be matu neder, of course. That's matu the neder, and it's considered as though it never was. Sure, but as long as you haven't been matu neder, you have to keep it.
We do it every year.
When we do it, keep in mind that, strictly speaking, Hataras Nedarim that we do on Erev Rosh Hashanah is, first of all, in principle, it's only for Nedarim that the person forgot. We actually say, you know, I can't remember, there would be too many to list and I don't remember them. If there's a specific neder a person remembers, he actually does have to mention it over there. Besides which also, I mean, strictly speaking, you need a Pesach, you need a Charata, being Matir Neder is not quite so simple. Like this, when we do it, I mean, we're not as prone b'chlal to saying Nedarim nowadays as they were in the olden days, but therefore we do it almost more as a formality. But the fact is, if a person makes a neder, he really does need to go to a beis din and have it properly taken care of. But as long as not, he has to keep it. I mean, one thing also to keep in mind, by Hataras Nedarim, we also make that Tanai. If in the future I make a neder, then I'm making a Tanai in advance that neder is bottled. However, one second, that Tanai only works if the person doesn't remember the Tanai at the time. If he remembers, if sometime during the year a person is going to make a neder, and he says, you know I made that Tanai on Erev Rosh Hashanah, but nevertheless, now I'm making a neder, then the Tanai doesn't work for that neder.
What's a neder?
A neder is, a person says, a neder would be, a person says that strictly speaking, a neder would be a person says such and such is also to me. Strictly speaking, a neder is one of two kinds of things. Either the person says that this money or this object or whatever will go to tzedakah or to hektish or whatever is one kind of neder. And the other one, technically a neder, is where he says this item will be also to me. Then you have a shvua, which is very similar, but a shvua is on the person. I will do such and such, or I won't do such and such. Strictly speaking, they are different. There's a number of differences between them and halacha, but many times they're kind of synonymous, which is why we mentioned kol nedarim v'chol shvuos in Hataras Nedarim and also in kol nidre. Yeah. So these things are not quite so simple.
Okay, in the example you gave before, if the wife starts breaking Shabbos, it's a sign that something's wrong with her, or the marriage, or everything.
Of course it shows that something's wrong with her. Yeah, I mean, it may lead to more problems, but right now it's not necessarily grounds for the husband to say that he wants to divorce her. If he wants to, then fine. Listen, I mean, again, before Cherem Ben Negoshim, he can divorce her for whatever reason he wants, but she wouldn't forfeit her ksuba because of it. Forfeiting the ksuba is where she's doing something that impinges on the marriage.
At that point, it's not so severe, but you have to look where it's...
Yeah, okay, that's up to him to decide. But the point is, that's not grounds for him to go to Beis Din and say, you know what, I want to divorce her, and she shouldn't collect her ksuba. But if she's acting unsneistic, or feeding him tray food, or various other things, or here we're talking about breaking her nedarim, then those are matters that are grounds not only for divorce, but for her to forfeit her ksuba. Okay. Further on, it talks about in a piska, a Mishnah, the quotations in the Mishnah, Elu Yotzes Shalei V'Ksuba V'Cholo. There's a list of cases where a woman can be divorced and forfeits her ksuba, and one of them is Hamakalelus Yoldav V'Fonav. One of them is where she curses his Yoldav, his parents, in his presence. So Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, that it means Bimkalelus Yoldav B'Fnei Melidav. Where she curses Yoldav in front of Melidav. Now, there are a couple of different Gersois over here. You see over here, there's a footnote that the Rif and the Rosh and the printed Gemara have a Gersa. Instead of Yoldav, they have Yolidav, which Hagoyes HaGural changes to Yoldav, like we have it over here in Ein Yaakov. Yoldav and Melidav, so like this. Yoldav would mean his parents, the ones who bore him, the ones who produced him. Melidav would mean the same thing as well, the ones that produced him. So there are, in fact, Rishonim who learn that way, and they say, for example, that it would include, if she curses his grandparents in front of him or in front of his parents. But a different Gersa is that the words are Yelidav and Melidav, in which case Yelidav means his children. So it would mean where she's cursing his father in front of his child or vice versa. Now the fact is the Mishnah had said b'fonav in his presence, so that would only include, for example, if she's cursing his father in her husband's presence. Where do we see that it also includes that she's cursing his father in front of his son, v'simonach? So a simon for you to remember that is like Yaakov says to Yosef, Ephraim and Manasseh to Reuven v'Shimon Yuli. Ephraim and Manasseh, who are my grandchildren, will be considered to me like Reuven and like Shimon, who are my sons. So we see, in other words, that the next generation. So we see, in other words, that the grandchildren can be considered like the children. So that when the Mishnah says v'fonav, doesn't necessarily mean it has to actually be in his presence. It would be enough if it's in the presence of his children. The Rif and the Rosh, besides that they have the different Gersa about Yelidov and Yoldov and whatever, they also have a different Gersa as far as what Pasuk the Gemara is bringing. They have a Gersa that the Gemara is bringing is the next one, Umoylad Dechasha Hilad Tacharehim, where Yaakov says to Yosef, any other children that you have after Ephraim and Manasseh will be considered part of those Shevatim. So then the point is, in other words, that we see that the word Moylad Decha, similar to Moylidov over here, means his children. So in short, it doesn't just mean that she curses his father in front of him or his parents in front of him. It would be also if she does it in front of his children, because again, we're saying that the children are considered the grandchildren of the grandfather, which is to say, her husband's children are considered like their own children. So that would also be a case, therefore, where it's grounds for divorce and for her to forfeit the ksuba. An interesting point in it that's brought is the Noitz Kalim on Shulchan Aruch, the Pisach Tshuva actually discusses over there, that doesn't mean necessarily that she has to curse them with Hashem's name. We know, for example, when it comes to the din, that when a person curses Hashem, then he's Chayav Misa only if he curses using a name of Hashem. Would the same thing apply over here? The Pisach Tshuva discusses, maybe, on the other hand, though, he says, the Gemara brings an example of a curse where she says, for example, May a lion eat your father up in front of your son. So then, in the face of it, doesn't involve Hashem's name. But then he says, you know what? You find that sometimes a lion is used as a metaphor for Hashem. So maybe it is. Maybe the Gemara means to say that she's using Hashem's name, and the Gemara is just using a euphemism. Further on in the Perek, the Gemara deals with various other things where that can be grounds for divorce. There we're talking not so much things that she did wrong, but rather certain physical defects of hers. So then the Gemara brings a statement by Rabbi Meyashia, the grandson of Rabbi Yeshua, ben Levi, about a particular din in that. So then, as the Gemara often does, it digresses to bring another statement from the same Amora as well. The pasuk says, "Ulatzian ye omar tetzian." It will be said, "Ish ve'ish yulad ba." Man and man was born in it. Vehu yechanan elyon, and Hashem, the Most High, will establish tzian firmly. So what does that pasuk mean? Now, the simple meaning of the pasuk, Meforshim, on the pasuk, we discuss a couple of possibilities. Rashi, on the pasuk, mentions over there two possibilities. One is that it means that, that like this, the Moshe Mashiach, we know all the Jewish people are going to be gathered from all over the world, wherever they are, v'atem to look to la'achad echad v'nei Yisrael, and the Pesukim describe in Yishaya and in other places that you even have the Goyim are going to bring all the Jews who are stuck in their countries are going to are going to bring them to Eretz Yisrael, to Yerushalayim, ve'vi'os kolachef and mincha, and other similar Pesukim. Agav, you have an explanation on that, I don't remember from who, that says you see from that very clearly that even the most assimilated Yidden, think of it, when Mashiach comes and he's blowing his shofar, you don't think everybody's going to come running automatically? Nevertheless, we're still saying there are people who are saying the Goyim are going to have to bring them, and nevertheless they're going to be brought and they're still going to be part of the Jewish people. So Rashi's first explanation is it means that everywhere in the world, people are going to say, hey, you know, there's a Yid. Ish, this person was born in Tzion. This person belongs to the Jewish people. We need to bring him back to join the rest of the Jews in Eretz Yisrael. The second explanation Rashi says over there is it means, like in nowadays, we might say, this person is very important. He's an American, or he's a Frenchman, or whatever. And when Mashiach comes, that kind of thing is going to be said, wow, he's so important, he's a Yid, he's a Yerushalmi. So the Gemara gives the Radak points out another explanation on it. It's important. It's good to know the meaning of it, the words of that kapitel. After all, we say it on Shabbos and Yom Tov and every day when there's no Tachlin, we say it before benching. It's good to know the meaning of it. The Radak, anyway, gives another explanation. He says, with other nations you might have, like you have in the previous pasuk, Azki Rahavu Vavel, I'll mention the various nations over there, and then we'll say this person was born there. Meaning you look at each of those nations, you'll find, let's say, there's one particular person who's very distinguished who comes from that nation, as opposed to Litzian. When it comes to the Jewish people, Ya'oma Ish V'Ish Yulagbar, we can give a list upon a list upon a list of many prominent, important people who are from the Jewish people. So Omer of Meyashia, Bab Redi, Rabbi Shrevan Levi, why Ish V'Ish, why the double expression? Echad Anolad Ba, it means both a person who was born in Eretz Yisrael, in Tzion, the Echad Hametzapi L'Roisa, and one who looks forward to seeing it. So in other words, so besides the three pshatim, which we said so far, and yeah, Rashi brings the first explanation that I said over here, that Rashi brings on the pasuk over there, he brings on the Gemara here as well, that it means that all the Jews will be gathered from all over the world, and we mean what kind of Jews? We mean both the ones who are actually born in Eretz Yisrael and the ones who look forward to seeing Eretz Yisrael. So both of them are Ish V'Ish. Each of them is considered somebody who was born in Tzion. So Marshall explains like this. In other words, again, so you have the different countries all. You talk about this person is from here, meaning that he was born there. But here we're saying, with a Yid, even if he wasn't born in Eretz Yisrael, he's still a citizen of Eretz Yisrael because Mitzapi L'Roisa, because Behu Yechonineha Elyon, because he knows Hashem will reestablish it, and he's looking forward to it. Thus, also the pasuk continues. Hashem Yisper B'Chsoiv Amim, Hashem is going to write, Hashem is going to count in the writing of the nations. So you have, in other words, that you have the various nations, you have there are people, there are Jews who are born there among those Goyim, and it's going to be written down, so this Goyim, it'll be written that they're born there. But a Yid is not going to be written that he was born in that other country, it's going to be written that he was born in Tzion, because that's really where he belongs. There is, in fact, a story in that connection involving, I think, Rabbi Chaim Sonnenfeld, the Rav of Yerushalayim in the 1920s and 30s. There was a Yid who wanted to immigrate to Eretz Yisrael, but the Goyish government of that time, the Turks or the British, whoever it was giving him a hard time of it. But if he could bring an affidavit that he was born in Eretz Yisrael, then it would make it a lot easier. So can he write such an affidavit even though he was actually born in Poland or whatever it is? Rabbi Chaim told him yes, based on this Gemara. He wasn't physically born in Eretz Yisrael, but he's Mitzapi L'Roisa, and therefore, yes, he is a citizen of Eretz Yisrael. Yeah.
So
all of us, in other words, I'm Mitzapi. Now, an interesting thing, though, actually, you have on the side of a hero of the Ein Yaakov, you have a pirush called Goin Yaakov, which is collected from various earlier Sfarim. A lot of the explanations, and it's too bad I don't comment on things from it more often. There are a lot of beautiful things in there, but a lot of times they're printed out of place because there's so little room on the margin that the things stretch out to another page. But he brings, like this. was saying Metzapi L'Roisa. Now, you know, you have the famous thing that the Gemara says, that anybody who mourns over Yerushalayim, Zoyche V'Roya B'Nechoma, he's going to have the schus to see the greatness of Yerushalayim L'Osid Lavoi. So if we're saying over here, all of us are Metzapi L'Roisa, and all of us therefore are considered citizens of Tzion, then how come, Ha'itochan, you have generations upon generations of Jews who were Metzapi L'Roisa, and they didn't get to see the Gola Mitzvah Shleima? He says, because, you know, when he's saying Kolamis Abel Al Yerushalayim, he says there could be two kinds of Avelus. Let's consider, for example, the recent events. You have those fires in California. You might have, you know, we're living here in New York. We know people who live over there. We know, we have relatives, we have friends or whatever who live over there. We krechts over it. We contribute to tzedakah campaigns for them. We don't feel it so intensely to ourselves because it wasn't our house. Mashen, can you imagine you have a yid over there who taka his whole house and everything is gone? He feels it a lot more keenly. So Goyen Yaakov brings over here on the side. That's the kind, when we say kolamis abel al Yerushalayim, zeicha v'roya b'simchasa, when we're talking about over here somebody who's really a citizen of Yerushalayim, that's the kind we're talking about, where he really feels the churban as a keen thing, as a personal thing, as though Pashat, his own house was destroyed right now, where not all of us think that way about the Beis Hamikdash. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Amar Abaye, v'chad minay odif ketrei minan. Abaye says you should know there is still the fact is the Jews who are from Eretz Yisrael have a greater advantage. Ish versus ish, but still v'chad minay, one Jew from Eretz Yisrael, one Talmud Chacham from Eretz Yisrael, odif ketrei minan, is as great in knowledge of Torah as two of us from Babel. Because Avidu de Eretz Yisrael machim, because the heir of Eretz Yisrael makes them wise. Omar Rava, Chad Minan, and Rava says further, when one of us, Kisolik Lahasim, if a Talmud Chacham from Babel moves to Eretz Yisrael, Kisolik Lahasim, when he goes up there to Eretz Yisrael, Odif Ketrei Minayu, he winds up being twice as great as the native people of Eretz Yisrael. So in other words, four times as great as he was in Babel. Jehorab Yumia, as we have the example of Rab Yumia, Ki Hava Hocha, when he lived here in Babel, Lo Hava Yoda, my Kamri Rabbanon. He didn't even know really what the Chachamim was saying. He was in the Beis Medrash, he's learning Torah, but he really didn't understand it fully. You even have, there's a Madura Kama of Rashi that's brought in a number of places in Shita Mukabetas on Arma Sechta, and in that Madura Kama, Rashi says, you know, you have a story in Baba Basra where Rab Yumia was actually kicked out of the Beis Medrash for a while for asking a question which the other Chachamim didn't approve of. So we see that in Babel, he was a shtickel Talmud Chacham, but he didn't amount to very much. Kisolik Lahosam, but then Rabbi Yumi moved to Eretz Yisrael, and he became such an enormous Talmud Chacham, Torilan Bavloi Tipshoi, that on the contrary, he calls us, as you find in a few places in Chas, the foolish Babylonians, meaning that he became so much greater, even that, you see now, the other Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael don't talk that way, because they're not as great, relatively speaking. They're twice as great as the Chachamim of Babel, but not four times as great. But meanwhile, Rabbi Yumi now is four times as great as the Chachamim of Babel, because he has the advantage of Babel, and he has the advantage of having moved to Eretz Yisrael and all of that, and therefore he winds up much, much greater than he otherwise would have been. It was actually Marshall refers over here to comments of his on a relevant Gemara in Sanhedrin, which was actually just a couple of days ago in Daf Yomi, where the Gemara compares and contrasts the style of learning of the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael and above all. In Eretz Yisrael, the Gemara mentions they were much more noichin zelozeh, they were calm with one another in halacha. They asked questions and they gave answers, but they were in Babel it was much more like the Gemara calls it almost destructive choivlim, like I have to show that you're wrong. I'm gonna jump down your throat, kind of, and show that you're wrong, and which is what the Gemara is all about. You have it all the time that somebody asks something, and you have five different people are jumping on him and asking, "I have a seder from a Mishnah and a Braisa and a whatever." So therefore, in Babel, then they have that sharpness that they don't have in Eretz Yisrael. But then therefore, when he comes to Eretz Yisrael, and on top of that, then he brings that sharpness. Plus, he has the Avidah Eretz Yisrael Machkim. Then it makes him so much greater than he otherwise was.
California right now is having those fires. One simple reason, in my opinion.
Let's not get into one simple reason for your opinion, because Shlomo. You're not the Eidishter, you're not a Navi, you're not even a Rav Manik Bistral. Don't start giving reasons to excuse to say why the Eidishter does things.
The Jewish people when they go to Eretz Yisrael,
yeah, they become so much greater. Yeah, that's the idea. That's what we're saying. Anaf Yosef points out another point as well, is also that they have the advantage that they're partially the fact that they're The moving, actually, it's Ion Yaakov rather says, the fact that they have to move, that they move to a place of Torah, have they go to the Mokom Torah, that itself is a milah that makes them so much greater, yeah.
This point on the davening in the oil, but in a way, it's I am a drager from Eretz Yisrael.
They never talked about, yeah, that the oil has a madrega of Eretz Yisrael, because eventually when Mashiach comes, when Tchias and Mason come, there'll be going to be Mechilos, there's going to be
davening in the oil, since doesn't have the kpeda on Eretz Yisrael, so it's
The Rebbe explains that the reason why it's connected is based on, we're going to learn later in the Masechta, about the Mechilas, about the tunnels that are going to be for the Mason to go from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael, and therefore it's considered as though even now they're open. Yeah.
So meaning, once we dive in here, it's the
Heitz Madriga. Yeah. I mean, the Rebbe also talked about the idea that shuls and Chutz La'aretz, eventually we know they're all going to come to Eretz Yisrael as well, and they're going to be joined to the Bais Mikdash. So therefore, shul, even in Chutz La'aretz now, has a certain semblance of the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. Yeah. Further on, at the end of the perek, it starts talking about, now we said what happens if the wife has mumim, now what about if the husband has mumim? So in general, those are not necessarily grounds for divorce. However, Mishnah mentions that there is one particular illness that if the husband has it, then it is grounds for divorce, and it's called mukashchin. Shchin on the face of it means boils, like we have by one of the Makas. In Gemara terminology, it seems that shchin means any of a wide variety of different things that you can see on the skin, and some of them affect other parts of the body as well. In particular, it seems from some descriptions in some places in the Gemara that shchin also includes what's called leprosy, which is not the same as tzaraas, but it's a disease that if it's left, if it's not treated, nowadays they have treatments for it, but in the olden times it could actually cause a person's body parts to wither and fall off. So the Gemara explains, and the Mishnah explains, and the Gemara expands on it, that a person with shchin, then tashmish makes his condition even worse, and therefore that would be, therefore it's best that he divorces his wife so that his health doesn't get even worse. So the Gemara gives in this connection, Tanya Omer Rav Yosi, Sochli Zokan Echad Me'anshi Yerushalayim, an old man from the people of Yerushalayim told me the following, Esrim Ba'abo Mukesh Shchin Hein, there are 24 types of Mukesh Shchin, 24 diseases that all go under the general term of Mukesh Shchin, V'chol and Omer Chacham Tashmish Kosher Lehen, all of them, the Chacham say that Tashmish is harmful for them, or Ba'alei Rasan Kosher Mikolan, the worst of all of them, of all those 24, is Rasan, as the Gemara is going to explain, as we're going to see soon from the description of the Gemara, what Rasan is. So Marsha brings from a medrash that when Paro kidnapped Sarah, he was punished with Rasan because it says Negoyim Gedolim, and that's the greatest of all the Mukesh Shin. Yeah, in particular because also it means that Tashmish is bad for him. That would also cause him to keep his hands off Sarah. Yeah. So the Gemara says to me, my hobby, what does a person get rasan from in the first place? The Tanya, we learn in a b'raisa, hik is dam v'shimish, if a person lets blood, which makes him feel weaker, v'shimish, and then right away after that he has relations, havyan loy bonim v'sikin, then the result is his children are going to be weak. If both the husband and wife let blood, and then they have relations, havyan loy bonim bale rasan, then they have children who are susceptible to rasan. So, Amar Papa, however, the Papa says, Layamaran Elder Laitoy Midi. That would only apply if after they let the blood, before they had relations, if they didn't eat something. I will toy midi, but if they eat something, like we do nowadays, like people do nowadays, after they give blood, less one brother, then there's no problem, it won't cause the children to be weak or to suffer from rasam. As we're going to see in the continuation of the discussion in the Gemara, basically the cause of rasan is that the person has an insect that lodges in his brain, and the Gemara is going to show how to cure him of it. But the result is it has a lot of physical symptoms. Among them is a skin condition, which is why it's called one of the mukesh skin, but it has other symptoms as well, as the Gemara is going to go on to say. So, what?
Giving blood?
No, I'm saying, in the times of the Gemara, Makis Dam was to let blood, means it was a medical treatment that they would do every so often. There was a medical idea then and for hundreds of years later that sometimes too much blood in your body is bad for you and therefore you have to let a certain amount of it out. Nowadays, there's certain rare medical conditions that also require it, but in general, I'm saying the modern equivalent as far as having blood let out of your body would be, for example, when you're giving blood. But the same idea you always see whenever Hatzalah or anybody has places for letting blood, then afterwards they have bagels and orange juice or whatever, babe, because as Gemara says here and in other places, it's important to eat right afterwards to help regain your strength. Okay, so the Gemara says, my simone, what are the symptoms of a person with rasan? Dolfan ene, his eyes are always tearing and watering. The daivi nechire, his nostrils, his nose is always running. The isolate rumem mipume, saliva, drool is always dripping from his mouth. The romu didve ilove, and flies are always following him. Umay asvase, how do we cure him? Omer Abaya, so Abaya says you have to start by making the following concoction. Pila, you take pila, which Rashi's French translation is a plant that's called in English pennyroyal. It's related to mint. So you start with that. The ludna and wormwood, which is a bitter herb. Gyuda de goiza, the next ingredient is the bark of a walnut tree. The gyuda de ashpa, the next one after that is the scrapings from an animal skin when you're preparing it to turn into leather. You scrape off things from it, so that's the next thing. Klilmalka. The next thing is klilmalka, which is a lily. And the last ingredient, maschala de dikla sumka, the shell, like the shell or the container in which a red date grows. When dates are young on the tree, they grow inside a kind of soft shell. So that thing is what the Gemara is calling over here maschala. So you take all those ingredients together, the sholakluhu bahadi adadi, you boil them up all together to make a kind of soup. The next thing, the next thing, you take the person who's suffering from nasan and bring it into a marble building. Marble is airtight, so that way no drafts from the outside will get in while you're doing the following operation that the Gemara is going to describe. Throughout Shas, it's always a commonplace thing that even the slightest breeze can make a person's sickness worse. And that, in particular, when you're doing surgery on a person, you need to have a place where breezes and things can't get in. So a base of the shisha, a marble house, would be like the equivalent of an operating room nowadays. The ila ika base of the shisha. If you can't find a marble building, ma'ila the base of the shev livni va'aricha. Then instead, bring him into a building whose walls are made out of 7 bricks plus a half a brick. The standard bricks in the times of Shas was 3 by 3 tefachim. Tefach being between 3 and 4 inches, according to the different poskim. So you're talking these bricks are around 10 inches square, give or take. So there, so you have the walls of the building have to be made out of at least 7.5 such bricks placed next to each other. So you're talking about a building with walls of like 6 to 8 feet thick, approximately. Same idea, in other words, that this way drafts won't get in. The next thing you do, v'notele tlasmea kasi al reshe, pour 300 cups of this concoction on the guy's head. Often in the Gemara, 300 doesn't mean literally 300, but it means you pour a very large amount of it. Ad rafya isidemoiche, until eventually his skull softens, and now it'll be easier to cut open, which is the next stage of the operation. V'korolamoiche, at that point you cut open his skull and you expose his brain. Now, umaisi arba taufi de osa, now the next thing you do, you take 4 hadas leaves, umadliko hadkara, you grab the bug over there that's in his brain that's causing all the symptoms of rasan, you pick up 1 leg at a time, umoisiv chad, and then you put it down on top of the leaf. And then once all 4 legs are on the leaves, then you'll be able to take it off safely. The shock of tzavza, at that point you take it off with tweezers. The point why you have to do that way, it actually explains, is otherwise if you just start lifting off the bug directly, it's going to dig its feet into the brain, and then when you try to pull it off, you're going to pull out some of the brain tissue with it, and the guy's not going to be any better off then. So you have to do this method in order to make sure that you can get it out safely without injuring the brain. This is right here in the Gemara. So you pick up 1 leg at a time of the bug and put a leaf underneath it. And then when you're done, then you have all four legs on top of the leaves. Now you can pick up the bug with the tweezers and then get it out of there. The kolile, and you have to burn the bug. The eloi, because if not, hodu ilave, it's going to come back and attack the guy again. So this is the process how to cure somebody from rasan. But as long as you can't, then as we're saying, then he's going to have those symptoms that we said before, and therefore he can be dangerous. There is a very, very interesting thing, and now we'll learn more about it tomorrow, Beis Hashem, about Baalei Rasan. There is a very interesting idea that the Kli Yoker brings in at the beginning of Parshas Metzora. He says the Baal Rasan of Or Gemara over here is a metaphor for a person who the whole, all the symptoms that we're mentioning over here is a metaphor for a Baal Lashon Hara. He says that here we mentioned that flies are always following him, and the next piece of Gemara is mentioning that the flies carry the germs of the disease and are very dangerous to others. So he says the same way, for example, you look at a fly, never goes for healthy skin. It always goes for, there's a wound, there's something smelly, disgusting, whatever, a fly always goes for that. That's what a Baal Lashon Hara is like. He's always looking for, there's good things about somebody, never mind those. Let's find the juicy, bad, the horrible stuff about him and spread that as far as possible. So that's the Gemara is going to say in the next piece, be careful, even of the flies of such a person, be careful, don't be anywhere near Bali. He says also Rask on itself, in the Lashon Raw, because this person always makes a point of looking out for the bad in other people. So the Gemara is saying to stay away from such people, which we'll learn more about that tomorrow, Bez Hashem. Okay.
Is a fly, does it mean somebody spoke in Lashon Hara?
No, so not necessarily every time you see a fly, it means somebody speaking Lashon Hara, but the point is that flies are a metaphor for a Baal Lashon Hara. All right. We know the famous Mishnah. We know the famous Mishnah that we have in the Haggadah, also Kol Yemei Chayecha Lahavi L'Moshe Mashiach, where the famous drush on it is that the whole purpose of a Yid's life throughout his life should be Lahavi L'Moshe Mashiach, and especially that Rebbe was talking about that's especially it's important to stress that in our times in our times. Kol Yemei Chayecha means exactly that. Every moment a person is alive, day or night, awake or asleep, at 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, he's still breathing the air. And we know, as the Gemara says, I'll call Neshima v'Neshima, for every breath that a person takes, he ought to be praising Hashem. So therefore, breathing is something that happens that has 24/7, unlike eating and drinking, for example. So it means Kol Yemei Chayecha, every moment of where he has new chayus from a new breath has to be involved with the Havli Moshe Mashiach, not just when he's thinking and doing things for all this to bring Mashiach, but his chayus itself should be for the purpose of the Havli Moshe Mashiach. Okay, continuing on halachas of Shabbos. So we talked about yesterday about how you're allowed to think of your business on Shabbos, but even though it's better you shouldn't, you should think happy thoughts on Shabbos, but you're not allowed to speak about it. Now, for example, you could say to somebody, do you think you'll be able to be with me this evening? Now, the guy understands that it means you want to hire him for a job, but you're not actually saying outright that you want him to hire for him for a job, so that would be mutter. Don't say, be ready for me this evening, because that's more saying like you want to actually hire him. But if you're saying, do you think you'll be able to be available this evening, then that would be fine, because that's not openly saying that you want him for a job. Okay?